They had a barracks on the far side of town, where they lived and kept anything useful or valuable locked up tight. Most people stayed as far away from it as possible. Smells, though, the heavenly smells that emanated from that building drew me towards it. That first time, against all of my better reasoning abilities, I'd crept close enough to stand on my tiptoes so that I could peek in the window. What I saw made me question our entire existence. They had a table full of fruits, fresh vegetables, and a hunk of meat the size of an 8-year-old kid. The food would have fed my entire quarter for a month. It was more than I'd ever seen laid out, even in the breeder wards. But it wasn't just their table spread. They had so much light, apparently as much as they wanted. They seemed so jovial. They were out of their blue-gray uniforms and in bright, comfortable clothing I'd never seen them wear before, or anyone wear before. I wiped my mouth as drool involuntarily welled up while I watched them tear into their meal. I turned my attention away from the food. There were other strange objects all around the place. There were long, heavy-looking sticks with what appeared to be metal attached to them, hanging on the wall in some sort of rack. They looked too big and unwieldy to be clubs. There was also a large, round plate on the wall that had the numbers 1 through 12 all around the face of it, with a couple of arrows that pointed out from the center at the numbers. They also had thick coils of rope. I had no idea so much of it existed. I'd only seen strands of it, small ties securing gates and cartwheels, nothing like what they had hanging there. What possible use could they have for so much of it? My stomach was protesting voraciously, so loud that I suddenly feared discovery. If I had not witnessed the joy with which they had delivered their punishment to that boy, I might have knocked on the door and begged for just a bite. Even if they beat me, it might have been worth it, just to get a closer look and a good sniff. We never saw them out after dark, so the next time I went, I felt a little bolder. It was late in the evening. The food was just being cleared from their table, leaving only a few bowls of kale chips. When I peered into their world, the night was warm, and the window was open a few inches. I could smell something so sweet it enveloped my senses. Warm fruit and bread. One of the men brought in round, steaming plates of something, and the brokers fell on it with spoons, filling their bowls with what looked like hot blueberries covered in glazed bread crusts. Whatever it was made me drool uncontrollably. My attention was all on the food. And like I was in a trance, I heard a smooth, continuous sound, like 100 birds calling out together, and it stopped my breathing. I didn't have a word for it then, but it stirred something deep within me, something almost akin to what tallow had been doing to me, but different. It was moving, it was rhythmic and nearly hypnotic. I looked around the room for the source of this magic and saw a small box, not much larger than the whole loaves of bread I'd seen on the ration carts. This had some knobs on it, and numbers, I think, but I couldn't be sure. When the men sat and weren't joking amongst themselves, I could hear the sound coming from the device. I was so struck by the scene in that room that I'd nearly gotten caught spying on the brokers. One of them must have been getting chilled. He walked to the window and pushed it closed. I ducked down quickly. Luckily, he hadn't noticed me. But I felt broken when his action shut me out. The sound the small box made and the wafting, delicious smells of their food were too much to bear. I ran as fast and as far away from there as I could, stumbling through the wooded area and collapsing. I cried the rest of the night, wept for what I did not have. Nor ever would. I cried for what the war had taken from us and what it would soon take from me. It was tallow that found me that next morning, sitting alone and wretched in the blueberry field, its fruit not yet ready to harvest. He said nothing as he sat next to me. I had my arms wrapped around my legs, rocking slightly back and forth, hoping to seek some comfort from the movement. My face felt puffy, even though I had run out of tears hours ago. He said nothing as he handed me half of his bread, and I thanked him for that. How could I possibly explain what I'd just seen? Chapter 3. Decision Made. Winter, I don't like that look. We both know most of them will be in for the night, except the patrols. What are you going to do? Just knock on the door and ask if you can borrow some rope? That's even if they have as much as you say. Do you not believe what I said I saw? A box that makes magical sounds, Winter? That just doesn't make sense. The metal clubs I get, okay, they probably have more food. But the other stuff is just too strange. They have lengths of rope that will make climbing down this easy, Tallow, and we're going to get it, and not at night. Tallow stepped back. You can't be serious. You just want to walk in and grab it in the middle of the day? They'll kill us, Winter. What do we have to lose, Tal? The war will kill us soon enough. Hardly anybody ever comes home from that. Maybe. But you still have 3 years. Why are you in such a rush to give that up? Give what up, Tallow? All this? I spun around with my arms outstretched. He was quiet, and I watched as anger began to boil up within him, threatening to explode. And then, like a summer tempest, it passed that quickly. You're right. And you're wrong. And you say I don't make sense. There really isn't all that much to give up. Except for us. This. We still have each other. What does that even mean? We can never be together, not in that way. I'd have to go to the breed. Don't even say that, his anger flared. Not ever. You will never go there, he ended solemnly. I placed my hand on his shoulder. He took a breath. We're not going to the broker's during the day. I was about to protest until he spoke again. We'll wait until they're asleep. The thought of being in the same building as a dozen brokers did little to quell the panic threatening to rise up into my mouth. It was my idea to get the rope, though, and I couldn't back out now. Potentially a whole new life was right in front of us, just below our feet. Plus, I could not handle the thought of Tallow thinking less of me if I didn't go. When? I asked, hoping my nervousness wasn't showing. Tomorrow night the moon will be at quarter. Should be enough to give us some light inside, but dark enough to keep us hidden if we need to be. We covered up our treasure, even though the chances of it being found this far out from the periphery of distance was remote. Not many strayed far from the perceived safety the brokers offered, or from the ration carts, lest they miss a meal. We walked quietly back to our quarters. I looked hard at Tallow, trying to read him. But he smiled softly, shook his head, and went to his own apartment. I didn't sleep much that night, thinking that it could quite easily be my last. I could only think of 3 people that would miss me. One was Tallow. But if I got caught, odds were he'd be right next to me when we died. Cedar, of course. But she would be all right. Then, perhaps because I was afraid and exhausted, the woman, Hope, came to mind, and I could see her sad, loving smile. Would she still care? Would she even know I had died? My life would be diminished if I thought she wouldn't. Right there and then I decided if it was to be my last day, I was going to visit her. The next day I pulled a comb through my long hair, shaking more of the muck out from the previous day's adventures. I pinned it up behind my head and borrowed some of Tallow's clothes so that they would hide my shape. That's not a good look for you, Tallow was eating some sunflower seeds. His gaze traveled up and down the length of me. I was acutely aware of how self-conscious I felt and how embarrassed I was from his assessment. You can stop looking then. I slugged him on the arm, sending a handful of seeds spilling onto the ground. Are you sure about this, Wen? You're not even sure she's your mother, and really, what difference does it make? I just feel like I have to, Tal. I can't explain why. Just seems like the right thing to do. Just be careful. Have you ever been there? I mean, since you were a kid? My heart rate increased as I asked the question. It was his duty as a member of our community to aid the war effort. And for men, part of that was visiting the bio barracks on a regular basis. Inwardly, I hoped he hadn't, but I knew how incredibly selfish that was. I never have. He let his head hang down a bit. Men were also encouraged to visit the maternity wards. The technicians had discovered that the intermingling of pheromones helped significantly with the success rate of a pregnancy going to term. I touched the side of his face, and he looked me in the eyes. My heart jumped.
Why?
None of them are you, he answered honestly. His eyes held mine for a split second, then again dropped down. The best word I could think to write when he said those words was gooey. Yeah, I felt gooey inside, like maybe I'd melted, and I could actually feel the melting, too. He'd opened his heart to me, and finally my next words were from my heart. I don't often say what I feel, and though there could have been so much more, I simply said, thank you. I'll be back before nightfall. I pulled the hood of Tallow's sweatshirt over my head and kept my gaze steadily on the ground as I exited his apartment and walked down the main street toward the bio buildings. My hands were firmly entrenched in my pockets. No one gave me a second glance. I lingered outside the massive structure for a few moments as at least a half dozen men, boys, really, entered. They didn't knock, but walked in as if they owned the place. I did the same. As I entered, there was a large waiting room with old chairs. It was half full, with some of the boys I had followed in grabbing seats, while others headed down a hallway that led to the maternity wards. Are you waiting for someone in particular? A woman who looked to be in her late 30s was sitting a few feet away at a desk. Her distended belly nearly touched the table. She looked like a sharp pin would make her pop. Huh? Came my ready reply. Oh, sweetie, is this your first time? She smiled at me. If you're waiting for someone in particular, you need to write her name down, and your name, and wait to be called. Otherwise, you can just go down the hall and into the first doorway that's open. Thank you for doing your part. She smiled again. But this time it looked forced. I wrote down hope, and then I started to write the first two letters of my name, and thought better of it. I almost scratched it out, but that would have seemed pretty strange if I didn't know my own name. I went with Wilfred, and then sat down. The woman looked from the sheet, and then at me. Wilfred. You don't look like a Wilfred. I gave her a weak smile and shrugged my shoulders. Hope, huh? She looked up and away. There's no hope here. She spoke so flatly I couldn't tell if she meant the abstract or the reality. Either way, I felt suddenly panicked. I stood up abruptly. There has to be. She's my... What could I say? No one had true relationships with the women here. If they did, they certainly wouldn't admit it. Just heard she's the best for first-timers. Listen, Wilfred. She said my name like she knew it for the ruse it was. I've been here for 20-something years. I make it a point to know everyone. There was a hope once, but not anymore. Are you sure? You seem like a nice boy. There it was again, loud and clear. I might be able to put my hair up and hide my body and most of my face, but she'd seen through it as if I was parading around naked. I felt completely and utterly exposed. The question now would be how much trouble did this warrant? There are plenty of other women here that can help you. Forget it. I'll try back later. I headed for the door. Come here, she said forcibly. I could feel the gaze of the others upon me. My face was blazing. I did as she said, fearful that she would summon the brokers if I did otherwise. I went up to the desk. You look a lot like her, she said softly. Don't talk, don't deny it, just listen. I knew hope. We were friends, at least as much as we could be in this horrible place. She was a beautiful but fragile woman, and this place destroyed her. When she was pregnant with you, yes, I know exactly who you are. She had talked about finding a way to get you both out of distance, to somewhere beyond the war. I wanted to ask her if such a place existed, but I held my tongue, hoping for as much as she would give me. There was a man, someone she had known outside. He visited regularly, more often than most. But after about a year, he didn't come back. That's when she started talking about these crazy plans. For nearly 9 years, we talked about it, but I figured it was more of an exercise in futility, wishful thinking. Everyone knows there is nowhere safe from the war. But she wouldn't stop, and as you got older, she grew more desperate. I was actually afraid for her. Finally, right before you were about to go on your walkout, she said she may have figured out a way. "What happened?" I asked breathlessly. She had suffered her fifth miscarriage the day before you left. I always suspected she had done something to make it happen. She'd said a few times that she wouldn't bring any more children into this world, that to do so was selfishness, her own rebellion. She told me that without babies, eventually there would be no one left to fight the war. Beautiful theory, I suppose, and I've had a lot of time to reflect upon it. But those that don't produce anything for the war effort, regardless of the reasons, are not allowed to stay here. "Where is she?" I asked, hopeful that I could reunite with her. "I'm sorry. I thought you understood." Her eyes turned away from mine. "She wasn't allowed to stay anywhere." It hit me with the full force of a punch to the chest. She'd stopped giving birth, so the powers had her killed. I ran from the lobby, my hood flying back as I did so. Tears were pulled from my eyes and streamed to my ears as I pumped faster. I found as quiet a spot as I could and wept for a woman I did not even know and now never would. I wished I'd never heard the word mother. How much easier was life without attachment? I felt the cold locket against my breast. I remembered Tallow's hand on my waist. I shook my hair free from the pins, letting them fall on the ground. I didn't want an easy life. I wanted a real one. Do others desire the same things as me and are just better at disguising their feelings? I had finally wrung the tears dry. My head ached and my nose was running. I heard the slow shuffle of footsteps approaching. I looked through a watery visage to see Tallow coming. "Hey, Winter," he said sheepishly. "You all right?" When I didn't answer, he continued. "I saw you come bolting out of the bios. I had no idea you could run that fast." He was trying for a levity I wasn't feeling. He sat down next to me. He must have known words weren't what I needed right now. He draped his arm over my shoulder. I didn't feel all right, but I felt better. He needed to be careful, though. Displays of affection might not be out and out against the law, but they were greatly frowned upon. How could this be wrong? I leaned my head into his shoulder. "You still up for tonight?" "Now more than ever," I told him as I wiped my sleeve across my face. Chapter 4. A Broker Falls. After rations that night, I wrapped up in my darkest clothes, and avoiding Cedar, I met Tallow at the edge of town, nearest the broker's barracks. We lay in a small, concealed clearing, waiting for the late hours to come. I was nervous, but that did not completely explain the pounding of my heartbeat. It seemed to increase tempo with each passing minute to the point where I thought it was just going to explode. Tallow was wholly unconcerned. He was sleeping next to me. I could just barely make out his features as the moon came over the mountains. His lips were slightly open, his chest rising and falling with every breath. His arms were up over his shoulders, his hands cradling his head like a pillow. He looked so at ease. I felt a bold rush of adrenaline. I leaned in close, my mouth hovering inches from his. I could feel a current of energy crackle between us, and I felt a giggle rise in my throat from the blatant nerve of my actions. If I had dared to kiss him, I knew it would create a physical spark that would wake him up. and then I'd be caught. But I wanted to. Oh, how I wanted to. I placed my hand an inch above his chest, slowly shadowing his definition, careful not to actually touch him. I did this for a few moments, caught up in the movement, when Tallow surprised me. "What are you doing, Wynne?" I pulled my hand back like he was on fire and I was in danger of burning myself. "Bug, big bug," I stammered. "You about ready?" he asked, sitting up. He didn't say anything about what I'd been doing. I could only hope it was too dark for him to have seen anything. That stupid smirk of his, though, had me suspecting otherwise. "Ready?" I asked, lost in thought. "You know, the whole breaking into the broker's building and getting the rope thing." "Oh, yeah, I remember that." "Thanks for getting the big bug away." Again, his face was plastered with a large grin. I shoved him. We snuck our way through the rest of the town. It was as quiet as it always was. The curfew made sure of that. To be caught out late would get you some rough handling and a bruise or two at the very minimum, depending on the broker that found you. If they smelled of kale chips, they were generally more violent and would deliver a beating that had sent more than one offender to the Medi building. We waited in a small scrub of brush for the patrols to change out, fairly certain that this would give us enough time between shifts to get in, get what we needed, and get out. Once we felt sure that the returning guards had had ample opportunity to fall asleep, we stood up. "You sure about this?" I asked, placing my hand on his arm as we made our move. Tallow looked down at my hand and smiled. I quickly pulled away. "Do you want in that building?" "I do," I told him. "Then this is our best shot." We crept closer until we were finally under the window where I'd watched them feast. Tallow popped up and stuck his face to the glass, his hands covering the side of his head to block out the dim moon that lit the grounds. He came down to me a few seconds later and whispered, "All's quiet. You stay here and keep a lookout. I'll go in and grab it." "No." "No what, Winter?" "We're going in together." "Absolutely not." "Do you know where the rope is?" "You told me, so I should be able to figure it out." "How long do you want to stay in there fumbling around? I'll grab the rope. You keep a lookout." I stood and headed for the door. I didn't want to risk Tallow getting caught. Sure, he was curious about that room, but I knew without a doubt we were doing this crazy thing because of me. I couldn't stand the thought of him getting hurt, or worse, sent to the war before making age. That had happened to those whose offenses were too great. Now that I was thinking about it, I didn't know how I felt about potentially getting caught, hurt, and sent to the war, or worse, sent to the bios. "Fine. This is our plan, and we're going in together," he said as he grabbed my elbow. I turned the handle on the door. It was unlocked. No one was stupid enough to come into the broker's barracks, especially uninvited. It took a moment for my eyes to adjust to the darkness within. I stepped inside and went for the wall so that Tallow could follow and shut the door. I could hear the heavy snoring of sleeping men, and right now that was comforting. Tallow took another step in and froze when the floor beneath him squeaked loudly. He slowly raised his foot, and the floorboard that first protested his arrival now seemed doubly inclined to shout his departure. "Damn it," he hissed. We did not move, waiting to hear someone shout out or the creak of a bed as one of the men came to investigate. When we were certain none of those things were going to happen, I pulled Tallow against the wall next to me. When he was safe, I slid to the side, going deeper down the length of the room. I dragged my fingertips across the rough wooden surface of the wall, stepping as lightly as I could, hoping that the floor closest to the wall would not make any noise. I had just reached out and placed my hand against the heavy hemp fibers when I heard footsteps. "Every night, the same time. You'd think I could take care of this before I went to sleep," the man groused. He had to relieve himself. With the weather still nice, he was foregoing a chamber pot and most likely going outside, which meant passing by both of us. I didn't see the flicker of a candle, and there was just enough cloud cover to shield out a fair portion of the moon's illumination. If my pounding heart didn't give me away, there was a chance he wouldn't see me. How he could miss Tallow was a different story. He was right next to the door, and as soon as the broker opened it, Tallow would be bathed in light. I grabbed the rope and ran my arm through the loop so that I had it up over my shoulder. Then I quickly reached around for anything I could use as a weapon. I felt cold metal, and then wrapped my hand around it. The stick made a slight tinkling noise as I pulled it away from the wall. The shuffling feet stopped. The man knew something wasn't right. "Who's there?" "Larico, are you messing with me again? I told you that isn't funny." His steps were warier, but they were still coming our way. I could just make out his silhouette as he stepped into the room. The light was getting brighter as the clouds moved past. I could see one of his legs as he moved closer to the window in the sphere of its influence. He was heading toward the table and the lantern that was clearly framed in moonlight. The stick was much heavier than I'd expected as I moved away from the wall and brought it toward my back. I didn't know what I was doing. I was so scared I could barely think. "Larico?" I swung with all my might, at first thinking I had misread my distance and was going to miss wildly. I would have spun to the floor and he would have been on me in less than a heartbeat. That reality never came to fruition as the stick vibrated mightily in my arms. I had crashed the wooden metal club into the side of his head. I felt a spray of blood as he cried out and then fell heavily to the floor. My head spun as the alarm being sounded screamed throughout the sleeping chambers. "Run!" Tala would come up to me. "Run!" I'd wanted to drop the stick that had caused so much damage, but I'd seemingly forgotten about it. My hand had clamped down hard and would not let go. Tallow spun me around and half-dragged me toward the door. Once the door was opened and the cold outside air hit me, I finally awoke and realized we needed to escape. Men were shouting, and we were running, fleeing for our lives. If we got caught now, we would receive a beating that not even the Medis could fix. I had struck a broker, and judging by the sickening sound of bone crunching, I'd hurt him bad. We ran until the town of Distance was no longer in sight. We ran until my legs ached and my chest heaved in exhaustion. We ran until my lungs burned, and still we ran. I might have kept going straight through the pickets if not for Tallow. "Stop!" he shouted. I could tell from the hoarseness of the cry he was pulling ragged breaths to get that word out. "Winter, stop!" I let the stick go and went to my knees, then to all fours. My back arched as I tried desperately to pull more air in. I threw up. Ribbons of bile hung from my mouth. I wasn't sure if it was from the thoughts of the damage I had done to another being or the running. My sides heaved and my legs were shaking. I don't know how long I was like that, but I figured long enough for the brokers to catch up. I think at this point I would have welcomed them, as I had no more in me. Birds were chirping all around. It was then I realized I could see the earth between my splayed fingers. The sun was beginning its journey across the sky. I heard Tallow approach. I turned my head slightly. He looked pale and slightly unsteady. "I knew you could run fast, just never knew how fast. You all right?" I dipped my head slightly. To do anything more seemed impossible. "What is this?" He bent down to retrieve the stick. I sickeningly noticed the dried blood and matted hair on the end of it. "Stick," was all I managed to get out. I rolled over onto my back, the sun feeling good across my body. "This isn't like any stick I've ever seen." He was cleaning the end off with a clump of grass. I sat up when I thought I could without falling back over. "Brokers?" He turned quickly, thinking I meant I saw them. "No way." He shook his head. "We must have run close to 10 miles. There's no way any of them would chase us this far."
10 miles?
I wanted to lie back down. Instead, I got up. My legs were beginning to cramp, and I wanted to stretch them out before that happened.
"What happened in there?"
He was asking a question while simultaneously checking out the stick. "Look, there's a hole here." He was trying to stick one of his fingers down the skinnier end of the weapon. He was going to see you. I had to do something. Tala was now looking at me, his gaze scrutinizing me. Would he think less of me? I wasn't sure I could handle that right now. Thank you. Although I wish you'd let me handle it. And what would you have done? I don't really know. Not sure if I would have brained a broker, though. If we got caught, I know what would have happened. I guess you did the only thing you could under the circumstances. Do you think he's... I could barely ask the question. Dead? I heard his skull crack, Tallow. I wanted to be sick again. It's all right, Winter. He came over and wrapped his arms around me. I cried into his shoulder. It had sounded like an adventure, retrieving that rope. But now I had possibly killed a person. And for what? To sate my curiosity? Tallow gently pushed me away and moved my hair out of my face. I looked up and could have stared into his eyes until the night made it impossible to do so. There was so much kindness and concern there, I wanted to melt into him. Come on. Let's go see what's at the bottom of that hole, and maybe I'll be able to figure out what this stick thing is. I appreciated the distraction. As long as we were doing something else, I wouldn't have to relive the feeling of my arms vibrating from the strike. We had to walk a few miles to get to the dry riverbed. We kept a lookout for any brokers or anyone else that might spot us out here, as there would be no doubt of our guilt if they found us. I was carrying the rope and Tallow the stick. I wanted him to get rid of the thing, but for some reason he was fascinated with it. Maybe I should go in first, Tallow said as we looked down the hole. You have to lower me in. I won't be able to support your weight, especially now. I was tying the rope around my waist. Tallow pulled on the knot to make sure it wouldn't slip. You ready? He wrapped the rope around his back and sat down by the hole, bridging the gap with his legs. I crawled between them and went down. Tallow grunted as he absorbed my full weight. Are you calling me fat? I asked with a smile. Maybe if he didn't steal double rations all the time, this would be a little easier, he said through gritted teeth. The room was huge. I swung slowly back and forth as Tallow used up nearly half the rope before my feet touched the floor. I'm down, I called up. I was so excited I gave Tallow rope burns as I ran toward one of the shelves. Hey! Sorry! I yelled, quickly unfastening the rope from my waist. I'm free! There was an overwhelming smell of must and disuse as I got closer to a debris pile. What's down there? Tallow called from above. Giant pamphlets, I said, as I picked up the pages of paper. Hundreds of them! I'd never seen anything like this. There was more paper in this one room than I believe existed in all of distance. Just a single one of these large pamphlets, which I would soon learn were called books, held more paper than I'd ever seen in my entire life. Any food? Tallow's displeasure was evident in his tone. That we'd risked our lives for giant pamphlets was not sitting well with him, his earlier enthusiasm having worn away with the broker encounter. I brushed the dust off one of the books. It was called Dictionary. I had no sense of what that word meant until I opened it up. There are so many words, I said to myself as I leafed through the pages. I placed that to the side, feeling I was at some point going to need it. The next book I grabbed was a type of dictated journal, The Adventures of a Boy Named Tom Sawyer. I'm coming down. Bring your fire-making kit. There was enough light to see my location easily enough, but not to read. My stomach was turning over on itself. I was nervous and excited. I was on the precipice of something huge. Maybe I didn't know it yet, but somehow my mind and body did, if that makes any sense. Within 15 minutes, Tallow was down and had the makings of a fire going. He had tied the rope around the stick I stole, then placed the stick across the window frame and lowered himself in. We'd be in some serious trouble if the stick came down. I didn't like the fact that if someone happenstanced across the opening, we'd be caught. But there was little we could do if we wanted to be able to get back up. Right then, I didn't care. Tallow and I found a large oaken bench, righted it, and placed it near the fire. The high ceiling vented the smoke. I just hoped no one was in the vicinity to see the black wisps. I devoured Mark Twain's story. I had become so completely oblivious to the world around me, so immersed was I in the one he had lived in. At first, Tallow's shuffling about had been a distraction, but even that had fallen away, like snow on a warm roof. When I finished and closed the back cover, I looked up, saddened, like I had just lost a good friend. I had a momentary pang of panic as I looked through the hole and noticed it was black, like it had been covered over. I snorted when I realized it was just that night had come to pass. "Tallow?" I asked softly as I looked around. He came through a stack of shelves that had partially fallen over, a book in his hands, and a look of horror on his face. "I think I know what caused the war." "Are you all right?" I got up, my body stiff from the run and the extended sitting. I was looking through this book. There was a fallout of zombies or something like that. It completely devastated the world." "What's a zombie?" I think they were people that got sick and became cannibalistic. They were raving mad and hard to kill. Do you think that's what we are out there fighting? Zombies?" He looked like he was going to be sick. I took the book from his shaking hands. On the spine, under the title, was a small white sticker that read, "Horror, Fiction." I ran over and grabbed the dictionary. It only took a couple of minutes until I was nearly falling over. I was laughing so much. "This isn't funny, Winter. I have to go and fight those things in a couple of years." While the part about him going to war was serious, his fear was unfounded. "It's fiction, Tallow," I said, as if he should know what that meant. His face was still drained of color. "It's just like this boy I read about, his town, his adventures. It's all fake. It's made up, like a children's fable." "Wait, there's no zombies?" "No zombies." "You sure?" "Pretty sure." "But Winter, this pamphlet, book, fine, this book says there is. Why would they use paper on something that wasn't real?" "Look around, Tallow. I think our ancestors had more paper than they knew what to do with, enough that they could take their ideas and write them down." "Okay, I get keeping histories and maybe even some ideas, but why would anyone write about dead cannibalistic monsters?" I shrugged my shoulders. He came over to me and was looking at the book I was holding. "What's that one about?" "Ghosts?" "This is a dictionary. It gives the meaning of words." He whistled and hefted the huge blue volume. "There's a whole book to tell you what words mean. What is this place?" Before I could answer any of the previous questions, he asked me another. "Hey, look for the word rifle. I saw it in a zombie book." This definition was accompanied with a picture that looked strikingly similar to the stick we were now using as a climbing apparatus. We both looked up at the same time. Our stick had just magically transformed into something completely different and very dangerous. "Whoa," Tallow said it, but I was thinking it. "I need to see if it has bullets." "What are bullets?" "Ask your fancy book there." He was moving toward the rope. He was halfway up by the time I read the definition. "Is that even possible?" I asked about the projectiles. It sounded like more fiction. "You coming up? I'm starving." Now that I thought about it, so was I. I doused what little flame was left with water from my skin canteen. I thought about taking the dictionary with me, but it was large and bulky, and getting caught with it would create a lot more questions than I was willing to answer, not to mention it would be taken from me. But there was something more. I also had a strong feeling that it was dangerous, maybe even more dangerous than our stick. It had just become a rifle that apparently shot bullets that could kill people. That was still open for debate. The night had a slight chill, or maybe it was just the difference between the world outside and the coziness of our private bunker and the fire we had just left. Tallow had undone the rope around the rifle almost before I had completely crested the hole. "Look at you with your new toy." "This is no toy." He was turning the thing around and around in his hands, once again looking down what I now knew was the barrel. "You do know that's where the bullets come from, right?" He quickly pulled his head away. Yeah, I knew that." "Why do the brokers have these? And how come we've never seen them before?" "I don't know, Tallow, but you can't go walking around with that thing. You get caught with it and they're going to know who stole it."
"You stole it?"
He was smiling mischievously at me. "Funny, like that would make any difference anyway. I wonder how you make the bullet come out. I thought you said you were hungry." I shut the window to the book building as Tallow coiled up the rope and placed the rifle in the depression alongside it. We then threw some grass over it. We slept under the stars that night, fearful to go back into town in case the brokers were patrolling and looking for anyone outside. I laid my head on Tallow's chest. His heartbeat quickened from the contact. After a long while, it slowed, and he began to breathe rhythmically. I did not think I'd ever be able to sleep, being that close to him. The next thing I remember was a robin's head cocking back and forth as it looked at me from a few feet away. The morning sun was shining bright, and Tallow's arm was draped over my shoulders. I moved slowly, trying not to disturb him. I felt his muscles tighten as he pinned me against his body. With his free arm, he found the hollow between my neck and shoulder and began to tickle me. I have been vulnerable to this torture since my 9th birthday. Fortunately, he rarely uses it because it renders me completely helpless. I was laughing so hard I could barely breathe. I twisted and punched him in the ribs. He oomphed loudly and redoubled his efforts. His arms felt like steel cables. Yet I always felt in control, until I pushed up with my legs and found myself face to face with him. The tickling stopped. We were now no more than inches apart. Our heartbeats were crashing into each other. For a moment we stared, each hesitant as to what might happen next. I let his arms pull me in closer. Our lips brushed together. I would have gladly surrendered myself to him, if not for the distant booming sound. I pushed up and off, the spell broken. "Did you hear that?" He was still looking up at me.
"No."
And then it came again. He sat up. "That's coming from town," I said. "We don't have to go back." And for a moment, those were the best words I'd ever heard. I closed my eyes. It would be possible to live out the rest of our existence here. We both knew how to hunt, and there was plenty of food, at least during the spring and summer. We would still need to gather some things, though, and sneak them out here. And now we had the bookhouse, protection enough from the elements. And no one would ever find us. But some of our friends were sure to miss us. What would we tell them? My friends were used to me being gone a night or two, but eventually someone was bound to report our disappearance. Then what? My stomach lurched when I remembered what I'd done. The brokers would look to blame someone for the injury of one of their own. They would hunt us down and maybe punish our friends if they couldn't find us. "We have to," I finally answered. "I know. I just don't want to." I ran my hand along the side of his face. We were back in town within a few hours. It could have been faster, but we didn't want to arouse suspicion, so we snuck back in as best we could. The brokers had everyone in the center of town, and they were all carrying the rifles now. "You will give up the person or persons who broke into our hut, or there will be serious repercussions for this entire quarter." It was Larico, the second in command of the brokers. He was shouting at the gathering. His brokers fanned around him. Some were walking through the throng, looking for a guilty party, or at least someone that was acting that way, I would imagine. "What's going on?" I asked Cedar. She'd had her walk a few months after me. We'd not known much about each other in the wards, but once we were out, we'd become best friends. I would share berries with her, and she would share bread with me. In the sunlight, her hair was a true reddish gold, and she was nearly as tall as I was. I knew that the boys thought she was beautiful. They always did stupid things when she would approach, like see who could hit each other the hardest or throw rocks the farthest. She usually ignored them. "Where have you been, Winter?" She looked scared. "Slept in," I lied. "Someone killed a broker and stole some of their things. Now they're insanely mad. Those things they're carrying make some really loud noises, and they said they can kill people instantly, and they will start doing just that if they don't get their stuff back. Do you think that's true?" "I don't know." Now I was scared, not for myself, but for what I had brought down upon my town. Anybody that got hurt, the responsibility could be laid down directly at my feet. "Oh, hi, Tallow," Cedar said as he approached. "We thought it would be best if we didn't come in together." "I'm not going to ask again," Larico shouted. The crowd jumped as one as he pointed the rifle into the air and released another bullet. "So that's how you do it." Tallow was looking intently at Larico's fingers. I could hear cries as brokers were pushing people over. Larico lowered his rifle and now had it pointing at the people up front who were pushing back, trying to get away from it. I could not allow this to happen. "I've got to stop this." "What are you going to do, Winter? What can you possibly do?" Cedar asked. I took a step. Tallow's hand shot out and gripped my shoulder hard enough that I could feel his fingers dig in. I turned to look at him. He shook his head, his lips closed tight. "No," he mouthed. The rifle blasted again, and there were screams. The crowd started to run in every direction. To stay in place was to risk getting trampled. Tallow did not release his grip as we ran. More shots were fired. We ran back to Tallow's apartment with Cedar in tow. From his window, it was possible to see down onto the square we had just vacated. 6 people lay on the ground, unmoving, pools of blood spreading out from each of them. "I might as well have put those bullets in them," I cried with my head against the glass. "Winter, get away from there," Tallow said as he gently grabbed my hand. Cedar had come up as well. I didn't want to move. I think I would have felt better if one of those bullets found its way up to me. "You didn't do this, Winter. Larico's just a bully. He always has been. That's why he's one of the broker officers. And just curious, but what are bullets?" Tallow shook his head. "Not now," he told Cedar. I cried so hard my tears were running down the glass. We could hear people running and shouting words of alarm all around us. The brokers were not quite done with their rampage. They were now finding stragglers and were attempting to beat information out of them that they did not possess. "Is that Jeb?" Cedar asked, putting her hands up against the glass. "He's only 10. One of the brokers was dragging the small boy to the center of the square by his hair. Jeb had his hands wrapped around the broker's arm, trying his best to mitigate the pain. At some points his feet weren't even touching the ground as the broker easily lifted him up. "That's enough!" I slammed my hand against the wall. "What are you going to do?" Tallow asked. "I'm going to stop them." I guess the set of my jaw and the look in my eye was enough to convince him not to step in my way. "I'm coming with you, then. We're in this together. No, you stay here. I mean it." My legs felt weak as I walked toward them. Jeb was on the ground crying, 3 brokers hovering around him. "Stop," I said so weakly I barely heard it. I walked closer, my knees knocking together as I did so. "Stop!" This time it came out loud enough that they heard, or maybe they'd just now seen me. "What are you going to do about it?" one of the brokers growled. "He's 10. He doesn't know anything." "Then he'll be dead," the same broker said. His pronounced hair lip made him constantly look like he was snarling, as one corner of his mouth upturned in a sneer. He was actually one of the nicer ones. But not today. Someone killed my buddy, and I'll kill everyone in this crappy little town until I find out who it was. We can't kill everyone, Larico laughed, startling me as he came up on my side. What about you, little girl? Where were you the night before last? I cried out as he tugged on my hair. Ain't no way she took Durgan down, the one who had dragged Jeb said. Yeah, but she might know who did. How about it? Do you know anything? Larico asked as he stepped in closer. The smell of him was offensive, because if you do, now might be the time to let us know. Larico nodded to the broker with the hair lip, who placed the end of the barrel against Jeb's head. The boy went from crying to stock still. Ever seen what happens to a head when someone is shot from this close? Ah, of course you haven't, you ignorant savage. You don't know anything. You're born and bred for one of two things, fight in a war or breed. I know it's against the law to kill. Oh, you know that, do you? Larico was now in my face, droplets of saliva hitting me as he yelled. I told him the law of life, verbatim, as we had been taught in class. All human life in distance is held in high regard, for without it we would fall prey to our enemies that surround us. Any life that is needlessly taken, whether through hostility or preventable accident, will be dealt with severely and is punishable by death. That last part always struck me as funny. In order to even out the needless killing of a citizen, they would kill another. That made no sense, as far as I could tell. And who are you going to tell, little missy? Larico laughed. The overseers are expected to visit next month. I will gladly tell them all that I have seen here today. Or I won't, I threatened. His laughing stopped immediately. And what if you disappear as well? I didn't have an answer for that. I saw it too, Tallow said, coming up behind me. Larico looked over my shoulder. I had not realized how incredibly quiet it had become while I was confronting Larico. People were staring at us from various windows all along the square. I heard a window open up behind me. Cedar shouted down, I saw it too! Then there were dozens of me toos throughout the area. Larico spun, looking in every direction. I could see the machinations in his head, wondering if he could silence all of the witnesses. I'm gonna remember your face, little princess. His meaty finger was thrust toward my nose. Fine, he shouted. You little bastards want to kill one of my men. It's half rations from here on out. He turned to leave. No, I said defiantly. Full rations. Who are you to tell me anything? The vehemence with which he delivered the words threatened to bowl me over. Full rations. Your men already take enough. Full rations, or I swear I'll tell the overseers everything that happened here, and more. I stood my ground. The overseers would give the brokers some leeway for their violent dispensation of discipline, but 6 distant citizens were dead, and that could not be ignored. There was a high probability the overseers would make the brokers pay some sort of remittance. We were 6 soldiers down now. It was not unheard of for a broker to be sent to fight in the war, and I was pretty sure they wanted nothing to do with it, not nowadays. Full rations, he spat. But I will remember you, princess, and someday I'll catch you out here alone. When I do, I'm gonna gut you like a fish. You touch one hair of the princess's head and I'll hide your ass, Brody, the leader of the brokers, said. I don't know where he'd come from, but it was easy enough to tell he'd been running to get here. What the hell happened? He was looking at Larico. Justice for Durgan. Larico spat. Justice? You idiot. This was a slaughter. Get your ass back to the barracks before I dispense some justice, Brody roared. Damn it, Brody said as he ran his hand through his hair. He waited until all of his men had retreated, then said, I'll send the medis out to get them properly taken care of once I sort this out. He turned and followed his men. The medis' idea of taking care of the dead involved reducing them to ashes and using the resultant gray substance as a fertilizer for the fields. I stood there defiantly until I could no longer see him. When Tallow came up next to me, I wanted to collapse into him. It was all I could do to stay standing. Tallow, get me out of here, I said breathlessly. I leaned heavily against him as he half-carried me back to his apartment. What were you thinking? Cedar asked. That was the craziest, bravest thing I've ever seen. People don't do that to brokers. Her eyes were shining with excitement. Maybe they should, Tallow said, as he placed me down gently on a chair. I was shaking like the last leaf on a wind-blown tree. Cedar was going on incessantly about all manner of things. I couldn't understand a word of it, partly because Cedar has the ability to talk at speeds that make words begin to slide into each other, as if she has so many thoughts she has to rush to vocalize them. The other problem was that I was lost so deeply in remorse and mourning. Nothing could penetrate it. Cedar, I think Winter needs to get some rest. Rest? How could she possibly sleep after what has happened? I mean, everyone just saw what she did. She'll be a hero. I heard hero, but knew it did not apply to me. I was a thief, a liar, and worse, a murderer. Not only had I murdered a broker, I was also directly responsible for those six citizens. Another wave of despair crashed over me. I was smothering in it. I moaned. Cedar, close the door on your way out, Tallow said, although I got the distinct impression my friend hadn't yet moved. What's the matter with her? She needs some sleep, Cedar. I'll have her find you when she wakes up. That seemed to mollify her. She bent down to look at me. You sure do look a little rough, Winter. I'll talk to you later. I let the blackness enshroud me. I had dealt with my reality long enough. I don't know how long I was out, but the sun had definitely shifted by the time I awoke. I found myself in my underclothes, curled up tightly on Tallow's feather bed. I sat up. He was sitting in a chair across the room, his feet propped up on a crate, his eyes partially closed. You all right? He asked. Better, I guess. How'd I get here? I put you there. Not quite the way I'd imagined, but... Tallow's face changed in an instant, his feet slipping off the crate. He looked embarrassed. I'm sorry, Winter, I didn't mean it that way. How did you mean it? I asked. He stirred uncomfortably and changed the subject immediately. The brokers are doing their patrols in groups of two and sometimes three, but they're looking a little scared. I thought about still playing with his bed comment, but it seemed wrong. Those deaths were so fresh in my mind. I know what you're thinking, Winter. I can see it on your face. You did not kill those people. The brokers did. Because of something I did, Tallow? Tears were welling up in my eyes. If anything, then it's my fault. What? You did it to protect me. If they didn't kill me outright, they surely would have beat me and stuck me in detainment until the next war cycle. I knew he was right. I had done what I had to protect Tallow. Now I was left feeling guilty whether or not my actions justified the outcome. Tallow and I were safe, at the expense of seven other souls. Why were our lives any more valuable than theirs? Tallow was quick with his response. Think of how many lives you saved, then. What? I looked up at him with blurred vision. You saved that kid's life? And just think of how many people would have died if Larico went through with his threat for half-rats. I did think on that, but it was a circular thought that always came back to the rifle slamming into that broker's skull. The rest of the night was something of a fog for me. At some point, Tallow left to get some food.